Welcome to my Love Life Podcast, episode number 218, Divorce. Good, bad, or something else? It's February 20th, 2024. I'm your host, Lisa A. Lundy, author, blogger, YouTuber, motivational speaker, and so on. I am also a member of the Newsweek Expert Forum. What I do is I help people be happy, healthy, and well-loved, even when life is extremely difficult. As my disclaimer, this podcast does not constitute medical or therapy advice in any capacity. There is no longer any music for my podcast intros or outros. I invite you to join the movement and get other people, social media content creators, to ditch the music when combined with voice. That would be helpful for people who have hearing loss. End of non-musical intro. Divorce, good, bad, or something else? Well, before I dive into this unpleasant subject as it is, if you're feeling suicidal or hopeless or life has been too hard for you, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or call or text 988. As I mentioned in the podcast intro, nothing I say in this podcast or any of my content in any form is designed or intended to be medical or therapy advice. It is simply not that. Here we go. Divorce. Good, bad, or something else? Well, this is an overview on divorce. This is not a podcast designed to provide instructions on how to get a divorce, whether you should get a divorce, attorneys, the legal process, none of that is in this podcast. So I do have, however, other podcasts that might be helpful if you're in a separation or you've had a breakup or, you know, even if the relationship was not a legal marriage. But this is not about saving a marriage or how to get a divorce. This is simply an overview on divorce, good, bad, or something else. I will cop to being twice divorced. I know, twice divorced. And we won't talk about that because if you're following along and you've seen or listened to my other podcasts, you know I have some dangerous people in my life. That is a fact. But we're just not going to talk about my divorce experiences. So like usual, I did do a little look into the research on divorce, which was very interesting to me. So a couple notes before we get into good, bad, or something else. So apparently over or around 50 years ago, then Governor Ronald Reagan, California Governor Ronald Reagan, signed the first no-fault divorce bill for the state of California. Now, I read in several reports that he later regretted it, but Ronald Reagan signing the no-fault divorce bill for California unleashed what has been called in some writings a national divorce revolution, with other states, 44 of them in fact, following suit within 5 years. That's a very short time period to have 44 states follow suit. That I think that would probably constitute something that's not usual. So in the area of divorce, we have fault divorce and no fault divorce. Well, it seems that fault divorce has all but disappeared. So I wanted to look at what are the consequences of a no fault divorce, because in several pieces I read, there are statements saying that Ronald Reagan admitted publicly of deep regret that he signed that into law. So what's going on with no fault that he would have that regret? Well, first of all, some of the consequences include there was obviously a dramatic surge in no fault divorces, and that also brought with it a dramatic surge in divorces. There was then no protection for the institution of marriage. There became an unequal distribution of marital assets as a result of the no-fault divorce, which left men and women and children in poverty, including being homeless, which we're not talking about. But I know men who've been left destitute as a result of a divorce. And there are people who've been left homeless, and there are children who've been left homeless. And it is a demarcation line that the no-fault divorce precipitated that, because prior, when they had fault divorce, the injured party would, you know, be kind of compensated, and so there was less of this disparity. And this has had a dramatic negative impact on children. The other consequence of a no-fault divorce is no one is accountable for their actions. So this act of no-fault divorce has perpetrated or contributed to an increase in bad divorces, because you're not accountable. You can do whatever you want. There's no penalty. There's no consequence. So there's a lot of consequences for a no-fault divorce, which seems to be the thing. And I was told, like, there's no such thing as a fault divorce in Pennsylvania, although I'm not sure that's true, but whatever. So what's the impact on children? What is the impact of divorce on children? So I took a look into the research on that. So divorce on children is associated with an increased risk for the child and adolescent in adjustment problems. So that includes academic problems, disruptive behaviors, and a depressed mood. Children of a divorce are more likely to engage in risky sexual behavior. Some of the literature saying there was an increase in teen mothers and teen parenting and pregnancy. The other impact on children of divorce, particularly no fault, is that more of them end up in poverty. And many times, according to the research, a child of a divorce will then later experience instability in their own family. They are increasingly the victims of abuse. So a child whose parents divorce has an increased chance of being a victim of abuse. They have more problems, including drug use and higher rates of suicide. That's right from the research. They have anxiety, constant or chronic stress, trauma. Statistically, children with divorced parents suffer in all areas of life, according to the research. There's an increased chance or risk of crime, them becoming criminals. They experience illness and mental health distress. And families of divorce are almost 5 times more likely to live in poverty than those with married parents, which again was not the norm when we had fault divorce, according to the research. So this next piece I'm calling the age of denial and minimization. So for the most part, in my humble opinion, we have been living in denial about the impact of divorce and minimizing the impact on children. This has a very serious impact on children, as I just read, and it doesn't stop when a child goes beyond age 18. There are adult children who are traumatized by their parents getting divorced later in life. Although I do believe the research I looked at is devoted to the impact of children 18 or under. That's what the research looked like. So here we have, since 50 years ago, so we've now normalized divorce. So now divorce is normal in the last 40 years or 50 years, and the impact is dismissed. Where are we talking about the fact that people, men and women, this is men and women, end up destitute while the other party is living the high life? There's no justice in that, and we're not talking about that. Now, I talk about that. However, I will say that the executive director of the local women's resource center said to me a couple years ago, well, you know, you're not ashamed or embarrassed, so you're talking about it. No, I have no reason to be ashamed or embarrassed because this happened to me. I didn't do this to myself. But people who end up poverty stricken or homeless, or, you know, like, this is more common than you would think, tend more likely to have shame or embarrassment or feel like it's their fault. And so we're minimizing things. We're minimizing and we're denying. It's time to tell the truth, because in the truth, we can make adjustments and we can make changes. Divorce is never good for children, even if you have a good divorce. So we need to stop with the BS. Like, and by the way, there are some quote-unquote experts out there who will tell you in their content that it takes two people to have a divorce. No, one person can ruin a relationship. One person can cause a divorce. One person can lack empathy, not be sorry, not rebuild the trust after betrayal. It doesn't take two people to end up with a marriage and divorce. One person is very capable of doing that, just like one person's very capable of being an abuser and the other person isn't asking for it or, you know. So I just want to make that clear. So this next piece is, so we've got to stop denying and minimizing this impact. This is a very serious impact that includes suicide in the worst case. This is a societal issue. And we're like walking around with blindfolds on like, oh yeah, that divorce doesn't hurt. How many parents have I talked to that were going through a divorce? My children will be fine. Divorce is fine. Kids are fine. Kids are resilient. And they just completely shove under the rug the impact on children. There is an impact on children and it's not good, even in a good divorce. So this next piece is if you have children of any age, particularly if they're under 18, but of any age. My suggestion number one is get them into therapy so they have an independent adult to talk to. I strongly suggest that. Why would you not want that? That's number one. Number two, for you and your child or children, get yourself on a growth mindset, on a path to growth and development. You could use the divorce to take advantage of post-traumatic growth and teach your children that we use pain to our advantage. We use a painful loss, a bereavement, or some tragedy or life challenge to become better versions of ourselves. That would be the most teachable, salient lesson out of a divorce, is how they could become better people and learn and grow. Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah, it would be amazing. And how many people are doing that? Not many. Three. Emotional processing skills. This is very important. I have a free workbook. It's easy to read. It's direct. Go through it with your children if they still live under your roof. If they don't, give it to them and it's free. You don't have to register. Help them. You're the parent. Help them. Now, my next suggestion, number four, is teach your child the power of their mind and their thinking. Thought precedes emotion. We learned that from the research in the last month or so, or 2 months, whatever. Thought precedes emotion. Well, most people don't have control of their thoughts. They don't have control of their mind, and they don't understand the power of my mind. Use all my podcasts on your mind and your thinking to help your children understand how they're thinking and the influences on their thinking. This is very powerful, life-changing stuff. So those are my four suggestions if you have children of any age. My next piece is where we're going to get into the good, the bad, or something else. So divorce is on a continuum. So on the left hand, we have what we're going to call a good divorce. On the right hand, we're going to call it something else. In the middle, we'll call it a bad divorce. And there's 100 degrees of separation. There's many, many different levels between good and bad, and between bad and something else. This is not a one size all. We have good, we have bad, we have something else. No, that's not how it works. There's everything in between good and bad and something else. I'm just giving those as three points on the continuum. So I'm going to start with a good divorce. A good divorce, this is again in my humble opinion because this is not laid out in the research. A good divorce is characterized by an overreaching concern for what is good and what is best for all involved, especially any children. This is using the win-win-win mentality or mindset that Stephen Covey describes in, well, I heard him lecture about that. I'm assuming it's in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. But this is a win-win mentality, not a win-lose. Even if there was infidelity, even if there was cheating, even if there was a betrayal or some other problematic behavior, both parties set aside their anger, their resentment, their hurt, all of their emotions, and get to the table with the good for the children and the good for both parties involved. That does not mean in a good divorce that one party hasn't been hurt or deeply betrayed. A good divorce is not about no one did anything wrong. A good divorce is when the parties come together to do what's best for everyone. It's not about attacking the other spouse. It's not about being vindictive or vengeful or punitive or retaliating. No, that is not involved. It does mean economic fairness. It does mean that one party is not left in poverty. It considers all the parties, all the situations. It's not a simple formula. But that is a good divorce. So what happens is sometimes people, they're hurt or they're wounded by betrayal or infidelity or cheating or gambling or whatever, some form of addiction, and then they're punitive. So no, a good divorce is when you're going to come to the table and do what's right for all involved. Even if that means you're giving up more money than you want to, or you're giving up something. You're doing what's best for the children first and foremost, and both parties economically and otherwise. So then from good to bad, there's everything in between from good to bad. So we're going to go with bad. So the hallmarks of a bad divorce, this is not an all-inclusive list, by the way. This is the high points. So one party is left in poverty or left with a deep disparity in financial wealth and financial status. The actions to prolong the divorce are done by one party to drive up the divorce costs or be punitive in some fashion. So the divorce will be dragged on by intentional actions of one party to hurt or harm the other or make them spend more money or what have you. Dissipating marital assets. That's when you get rid of marital assets, which is, there's a lot of ways you can do that. Is a common tactic in a bad divorce. You can find legal literature about the dissipation of marital assets, including the premarital dissipation of marital assets, because it often happens before the divorce begins. There's an unwitting party who doesn't know the divorce is coming, and the other person is like viciously, you know, gambling away retirement just so their spouse can't have it, like, or hiding money or whatnot. So that's a very high level bad divorce. It's a hallmark of a bad divorce. Abandoning the children by one parent is a hallmark of a bad divorce. Lying, poisoning the well, triangulation, smear campaigns are another hallmark. Not considering the welfare of the other party or the children, like having a win-lose mentality, me against them. Economic abuse done during the marriage or during the divorce. Using the children as pawns or weapons. And a lack of general concern for the other party and or the children. So those are the hallmarks of a bad divorce. Now we're going to go to the far other end of the continuum and of something else. So what's the something else? Well, I'm calling it a heinous abomination of divorce. So heinous means wicked, ugly, atrocious, or unappealing. Abomination means abhorrence, hatred, extreme disgust. So for me, this seems like the right language to call something worse than a bad divorce, a heinous abomination of divorce. This is the polar opposite of a good divorce. This typically or almost always involves someone who is a narcissist, a psychopath, someone who has a borderline personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, or some form of psychopathy, even if they are not clinically diagnosed. So someone could be a psychopath without being clinically diagnosed, although I know one who is clinically diagnosed. So they could have the mental health issues without a clinical diagnosis, because some of these people are smart enough not to go into therapy where they will actually be found out. And some of them are so filled with hubris and full of themselves, they go into therapy and after 5.5 years, they're found out and they get diagnosed as a psychopath. But at the end, in this arena of the heinous abomination, this may involve domestic abuse. That's a common situation in the heinous abomination of divorce. When you have domestic abuse involved, there is almost always economic abuse. In domestic violence, economic abuse from the research happens between 94 and 96% of the cases. Economic abuse and domestic abuse without the violence, we don't know the statistic on that because I don't think that anybody's really even tracking that. One party in the heinous abomination of divorce may represent a danger to the other party or the children or both, even if there has been no violence prior. And in the extreme of a heinous abomination of divorce, bribery is used to get the outcome that one party wants. One party is left in poverty by malice and by intention. The person who's the perpetrator of the heinous abomination of a divorce will absolutely drag out the divorce and lie and do anything to prolong the divorce and to increase the other party's legal fees. Fraud is often involved, dissipation of marital assets for sure. One party actually, in a heinous abomination of divorce, one party actually wants to crush the other. That's really the intention. They will stop at nothing in the worst cases. And these people are basically evil monsters. They're not well. They're not well. And unfortunately, they get away with it because, well, we have a corrupt legal system in some instances. We have judges that take bribes and, attorneys who take bribes. So, you know, that's the heinous abomination. It is the worst of the worst. Now, for some people going through a divorce, good, bad, or a heinous abomination represents a trauma. And this could be a betrayal trauma if betrayal was involved, which is common. And trauma bonding may also be in play. That's also very common in my humble opinion. And divorce in some families is a generational trauma. Just like in some families, domestic abuse is a generational trauma that happens from generation to generation to generation. So that, and by the way, this could be a trauma for your children if your children are grown and out of the house. I mean, I have talked to people who were old people whose parents got divorced late, and it was very traumatic for them. Very, very traumatic. Now, even if it's not a trauma, it could be a traumatic event. Trauma and a traumatic event are two different things, but it could be a traumatic event. Now, if domestic abuse is going on, I do have content that will support you. That is very problematic, very painful, very difficult, for sure a trauma, and will make it extremely painful. And it adds a lot of layers of complications. So if you've been in a marriage that involved domestic abuse, first of all, God love you. Like, I do have some experience with that. I know it's painful. So here we have now good, bad, and a heinous abomination. So I do want to come back, though, to this no-fault divorce, because now we've kind of seen three different pieces on the continuum. But since the introduction of the no-fault divorce bill and the 44 states that followed suit within 5 years, we have divorce rates that have skyrocketed. And maybe only leveled out in the last two decades. But what's clear is this is not having a good impact on children, on some women and some men when they're left in poverty, which from the research does not seem to be the case with a fault divorce, because in a fault divorce, we outline someone who's the perpetrator, someone who did the betrayal, what they did, and there's some accountability. So no fault divorce by its very nature removes fault, removes accountability, and it removes the leveling of the playing field financially. That's been the impact, whether that was, you know, an intentional impact or not. But it seems like, of course, it would make sense. If you're both equally at fault because we have no fault, then you shouldn't be getting more money, even though you stayed at home for 20 years and you have no money in your retirement. So one of the things I found in the research was that this no-fault divorce promotes moral disengagement. Moral disengagement functions in the perpetration, according to the research, of inhumanities, which allows inhumane conduct without any consequences. This is what we're talking about in some levels of a bad divorce and almost all levels of a heinous abomination of a divorce. We are talking about inhumane treatment of another without any consequences. So the literature supporting, because of course we like to give both sides, the literature supporting no-fault divorce, because there are still entities supporting a no-fault divorce, despite what we've learned, there, one of their major flags is that it reduces legal costs as a benefit. Okay, well, that's not true if you have a bad divorce or a heinous abomination, because someone's driving up the legal costs by being a jerk and lying and not cooperating, etc. So, but I didn't see anything in the no-fault fan base addressing inhumane and cruel treatment that is encouraged at some level by a no-fault divorce. So I assert anything that promotes moral disengagement is not beneficial to society. It is not. Moral disengagement that allows people to be treated inhumanely, no, that's a no-go. That's not good for people. And clearly, there has been some level of moral disengagement in no-fault divorce. That's what it is. Like, no, you're not at fault. You may have gotten rid of all the money and lied and betrayed and lied for 20 years, but, you know, you get to... No, this is one of the societal problems we have, moral disengagement. All right, so I have some final thoughts and suggestions. If you're going through a divorce or if you've been through a divorce, some people, sadly, the divorce they went through, or the divorces, plural, become an overreaching theme, and it has this negative impact on them. And it's like they're still talking about their divorce 20 years after the fact. Oh, no, people, no. We want you to get a life. So here are my suggestions. Number one, you grow yourself like crazy. You adopt a growth mindset and start working on yourself. Your mind, your thinking, your emotions. Number one. Number two, you get your children and yourself into therapy. Now, if your children are grown, you might not have control of that, but you could have a joyous exploration, learning and growing with the help of someone who knows about psychology. You could also use my content, but we know it's not intended to be therapy advice in any way or medical advice, but I do recommend if you have children under your roof to get them into therapy. I really do recommend that. Number three, deal with any trauma bonds. Trauma bonds was new to me last year with the whole Jennifer Frades betrayal trauma theory work and betrayal blindness. And then we fell into generational trauma and trauma bonds. It is highly likely you might be trauma bonded with the person you're getting divorced from. I do have a podcast about generational trauma and trauma bonds, so that will help you. Four, say yes to post-traumatic growth. This is, for many people, trauma. So take some good from it. And I have plenty of content that will help you. Number five, take the high road. I can't tell you how many people suggested some pretty dirty tricks when I was going through a divorce. And I just wouldn't have it. I am not going to stoop to anybody's level. I have had the rug, you know, ripped out from under me, and I've been betrayed and I've been robbed and I've been everything, but I take the high road. And that's one of the reasons why my life is so magical. Number six, take responsibility for whatever you can. That's always helpful. It's part of self-awareness. And sometimes when I talk to people about this topic, whether it's in life coaching or separate, people will say, you know, I really didn't do much to try to save my marriage. Well, okay, if that's a truth, if that's a fact, then own it. Take responsibility for that. You're not going to go back and fix and change it, but it's helpful for you to at least own that. Because if you have children, you could own that with your children. Now, on the other extreme, some people do backflips, cartwheels, handstands to save their marriage, only to find out it was a con job from the beginning. And then maybe you could take responsibility for being too trusting, not getting hip to the con sooner, being, you know, a people pleaser or liking to have peace. Like, take responsibility for whatever you can. That's always helpful. Number seven, if you were in any way unfair or a jerk in your divorce, clean it up and make it right. You can do that after the fact. You really can. I'm not saying that you were a jerk or that you were unfair, but if you were, clean it up. That will give you peace of mind. That will go a long way to restoring karma. I believe in karma. I don't know much about it, but that's why I try to live a good life, people, because I'm probably scared of hell. It's probably what it is, but karma, whatever. So clean it up. If you made a mistake or you did something bad or you did something wrong, clean it up, even if it's 10 years later. Number eight, understand if you have children of any age, it could take several years before you see evidence of problems in your child or in your children. It's not often an overnight thing when a divorce starts happening. So just be mindful that I've covered the long list of negative impacts for a divorce. It could be 3 years after, it could be 5 years later, it could be whenever. Just be mindful that any problems with your child or adult child may not show up right away. Number nine, forgiveness. Whatever happened, if you need to forgive yourself, forgive yourself. And you might not need to forgive yourself, but you may need to forgive yourself. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you've done. I don't know what happened. But forgiveness is always for you. I do also recommend, if you're the aggrieved party of a bad divorce or a heinous abomination of a divorce, that you do the emotional work to forgive the other party. Carrying grudges is like you carrying around a little reminder. This is why some people 20 years later are still, you know, fuming or talking about their divorce. I don't think about those two bad things unless someone brings it up, because I'm working on my beautiful life. I'm working on, like, having my life be amazing. Something from external has to come into my purview to remind me. I've forgiven them. I feel sorry for them. Like, they're lost completely. I don't think about them. But of course, I do have the power of learning. I know how to control my mind and all that stuff. But anyway, forgiveness is for you. I do recommend, if you have to forgive yourself for anything, do that. And I do recommend, if you can work through your emotions to arrive at forgiveness for yourself, that's going to be better for you, in my humble opinion. Number 10, go make your life beautiful and amazing. Focus on building a magical future for yourself, and if you have children, your children. When you have a bad divorce or a heinous abomination of a divorce, that will likely, you having this magical, beautiful, amazing life, is likely to send your former person into a rage. Like, if it's the heinous abomination of a divorce, it will certainly put them in a rage. And I mean a massive rage, because what they wanted in a heinous abomination of a divorce, and sometimes in a bad divorce as well, is they wanted to crush you. They wanted to crush your soul. They weren't interested in a win-win. They weren't interested in what was best for all parties. And that means they're not well. So you having, not being crushed, and you having this beautiful, amazing life, there's nothing you could do that would make them madder, sicker. It's like a mortal wound to them. that they did not prevail in crushing you. So do this for yourself, but just notice you get the side bonus of like sending them off the deep edge. Well, who cares? Like go, who, you know, like you, anyway, so have this amazing, beautiful life. You'll get lots of benefits. Now, my next suggestion, number 11, is be willing and be prepared to apologize to your children and take responsibility for your parenting prior to and during a divorce or even post-divorce. Don't brush it off. Don't be defensive. Don't invalidate their feelings. Like I had to say to my kids, I was in three traumas while I was raising you. There was days I just didn't know if I could make it, and I'm sorry because I made lots of mistakes. And whatever you are angry or upset about, just tell me so I can apologize. There are plenty of people who aren't willing to take responsibility and apologize for their behavior. And I want to say, grow up, grow yourself, get a growth mindset, and get with the plan. All right, number 12, learn to control your mind. This will be very valuable because the people I was mentioning earlier who 5 years or 10 years after a divorce, or in one or more cases, 20 years after a divorce, they're still ruminating, brooding, overthinking, catastrophizing, having these negative thoughts about an event that is way in their past, way in their past. You learn to control your mind. And of course, if you're also making your future beautiful, you have other things to think about. Learn to control your mind. And I do have a podcast about that. Number 13, self-care and self-compassion. Oh, I have a podcast on self-care and self-compassion. I'm a diehard fan. This will be very good for you if you're going through even a good divorce. I mean, divorce is painful even if it's a good divorce. I mean, all a good divorce means is that you're both working cooperatively for the benefit of everyone. So it's a win-win-win and the children are especially cared for. But divorce, even in a good divorce situation, is still painful. So boost your self-care and have some self-compassion. Number 14, if you have either a bad divorce or a heinous abomination of a divorce or something in between a bad divorce and a heinous abomination of a divorce, my most serious recommendation for you is that you take drastic steps to protect your children. I wish someone had told me about this. I wish I had known more about psychopaths and other people who have mental health disorders. And the way that you protect your children is through education, skill building, and rational thinking. Because if you are dealing with a bad actor of any ilk, they will engage in smear campaigns, poisoning the well, triangulation, and other nefarious tactics, which is a total mind F for your child. This is like a very serious mind F. You know what I mean by F, right? This is like the worst psychological trauma for a child is then to be unwittingly exposed to a smear campaign, poisoning the well, triangulation, and they won't know it. It's like a lamb to the slaughter. It's really bad. It's a total mind F. It's a total mind F, and it should be completely illegal. It should be a chargeable event. It really should be. But this is what people who are mentally ill or mentally not okay, they do that, particularly in the spectrum from starting at a bad divorce, not necessarily, but likely, to a heinous abomination. Like, I wish I had known that people with certain mental health disorders, this is what they do. They cannot help themselves. They are not well. They're not rational. And you're the awful person. And they will stop at nothing. They will literally stop at nothing. And you may have children with the person you divorced in the bad divorce or the heinous abomination of a divorce. They will take your children and try to take them out because they're not well. people who are not well, they might know they're actually unwell. I don't know. But they will be vicious. The way to protect your children is through growth and development, educating them. I would have them understand what is a smear campaign, what is poisoning the well, what is triangulation. I would have them understand those terms and be vigilant. I wouldn't say to them, well, it's likely your mother will do this, or it's likely your father will do this. I wouldn't say that. That would be you poisoning the well. I would say, I'm educating you for life. And in life, you could bump up against these things with a coworker, or it could happen with a neighbor. And this is very important for you to know. I would educate them without pointing the finger as to why you're doing it, which is if you get on a growth and development, a growth mindset pathway, everything you do, will you're covered because they're growing, learning, growing, learning. This should be illegal to play a mind F with your child. It should be, it's the worst form of abuse, because if the child doesn't know it's happening, this could lead your child to develop a very serious mental health problem or even become suicidal. So protect your children, please. And I guarantee you, if you're dealing with someone who's perpetrating a heinous abomination of a divorce, they will absolutely do all of those things. They will do all of those things to your children and anybody else they can. I promise you that, because they're not well. Number 15, if you didn't do all that you could have done to fix or change your marriage, you will need to make peace with yourself. I don't recommend you looking back and going, oh, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. You did the best you could with who you were, with what you knew, with your skills and abilities at the time. Deal with your emotions so you're not carrying regret and pain into your future. Deal with your emotions. And it's not unreasonable that you might have been able to do more. Like maybe you could have, I don't know. But deal with those emotions and don't be putting yourself in the past saying, yeah, because guess what? If I went back in the past and got to reparent my children knowing what I know now, things would be very different. Things would be very different. But I didn't know the things I know now. I didn't know them then. And, you know, so arrive at a place of self-forgiveness, learn from it, and make peace with your past so you're not dragging it forward. Now, if you are going through a divorce, good, bad, or heinous abomination, it's good if you can stitch together an intimate small team of people to support you. Every little bit of encouragement and support will be helpful, because divorce is painful. There, even in a good divorce, it's painful. So if you can create a little bit of a team, that would be good. Now, number 17, whatever you do, do not let this ruin your life. You can, I just don't recommend it. And be mindful of any decisions that you make as a result. I've talked about this in many podcasts, that after my second divorce, I decided mentally in my conscious mind, I was never going to be with a man again. I was never going to do that again. It was too painful. And I told people that, and some people laughed and they said, well, you know, Lisa, you should never say never. And some of them were like, oh God, I support you. Of course, why would you ever do that again? And then God and the universe had other plans for me. So despite my protests and my disagreement, God has put me in a position to be open and receiving to a beautiful man when he comes into my life, which will be any day now. I know, any day now. But don't let a bad divorce, a good divorce, a bad divorce, a heinous abomination, be the thing that stands in your way to having an amazing life. I seriously can't tell you how many people will continue to talk about their former person years later. Get that person out of your mind. They have no business. You're letting them live in your head rent free. No, by the way, we don't call the men I was married to a former spouse or a former husband. We call them that man, thing one and thing two. Because somebody who's been abusive to me doesn't get a term of endearment like husband. They don't get the term of former husband or ex-husband, because the word husband is a term of endearment. So if someone's been bad to you, you can call them that man or thing one, or you can come up with some other name. But don't let someone from your past come into your future with you, which if you don't deal with your emotions, make peace with the past, deal with whatever you did or didn't do, take care of things, you're just going to drag this ugly mess into your future. No, no, no. You want to take a page from my book. Literally, someone has to remind me of those two situations for me to remember. I just don't think about them. I don't think about them. I don't think about what happened. I am on my living in the present. I'm living in the present right here, right now, and creating my beautiful future. But yet, I talk to people all the time who are still 20 years after a divorce, bitching and complaining, whining and resentful, and you know they haven't dealt with their emotions. Don't let that be you. I hope this has been helpful. Certainly, we need as a society to make some changes because it was an eye-opening experience to read up on no-fault divorce, which I hadn't looked at the research on that. I was really unfamiliar of the relationship between no-fault divorce and people being left in poverty or having a great disparity as an outcome for a divorce. And anything that incites or promotes moral disengagement is bad for society. It is just bad for society. And we are engaged in moral disengagement when we allow people to do really nasty things, really inhumane things to another, and there's no accountability. That's the overview on divorce. I hope it's been helpful because I do want you to have this amazing life. I want you to be happy and healthy and well-loved and living into your gorgeous, beautiful future. Dragging your past into your future is not going to help you. It's not going to help you in any way. And that's not what I want for you. You're welcome to do it. If you have to, go right ahead. You can do that. But I don't recommend it. I do love you. Let me know if there's something else I can do for you. I'm Lisa Lundy saying thank you for listening to my Love Life podcast, episode number 218, Divorce. Good, bad, or something else? Well, we now know what the something else is. I hope you will share this podcast on social media to help other people dealing with divorce or who are divorced or who might be going through a divorce to help them get a leg up. I do love you. That's it for now.